Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, Sign Guy here with you. QT will be joining us shortly. I am very sad to report that today we lost the legendary Mr. Fuji, someone that wrestled up here in our neck of the woods in the Pacific Northwest for quite some time. He was well known nationally with the World Wrestling Federation, both as a wrestler and as a manager. He passed away today at the age of 82, so we are going to toll the bell for Mr. Fuji. Well, if anyone is looking for some wrestling today, there are a lot of shows going on up in our neck of the woods. NWA Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland like usual. KDW in Jeffersonville, Indiana like normal. CW Hollywood in Port Huneme, California. SPW in Sacramento, California. DWI in Ruskin, Florida. PWR in Swansea, Illinois, Future Stars of Wrestling in Las Vegas, Nevada, ACW in Austin, Texas, and ICW in Milwaukee, Wisconsin today. Without further ado, I am very pleased to bring on our guest today. He is Wallaby Joe. Wallaby Joe, welcome to our show.
Aussie, oi, oi, oi. Pleasure to be here, mate. Appreciate the invite.
Our pleasure to have you here. Now, since this is your first time with us, we are going to give you our first-timer's question to start off the show. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Grew up watching it. Had a lot of, you know, particular ones I liked, and me and my friends play around, you know, depending where the stars we watched on television. And, you know, once the telly gets in, you know what you're going to do, mate, you know. And then and then finally found a place that was willing to after I moved here to America and started doing it just to have some fun and wind up in some places never expected before and have never not liked what I tried to do here.
Now,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, now, a lot of wrestlers have gone to Australia from other countries over the course of wrestling's history to try to get things started. We don't see a whole lot of Australians make it to the United States. Did you find that was sort of a challenge being able to make it in this country?
It wasn't that hard getting into the country, but I didn't really come over here for the wrestling part. I just wanted something new to experience, and then I got over into here and, you know, lived a little bit of life and took some turns. And I was like, well, I'll definitely try it here in America. And next thing I know, I just wound up being a pretty good entertainer, I believe. And so I've been complimented. You know, I have a lot of people who don't like me, too, which, hey, it's their business if they don't. If not for that, they wouldn't come to watch me getting a little tussle, you know what I'm saying? So other than that, I didn't find it. But to get into the actual sport here, it was a little hard at first, actually, you know, to find some place that was a decent school or was actually legit, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't really know what they're doing, and they're like, come on, pay me some money, and I'll show you. And so, you know, you had to avoid a lot of those, and unfortunately, I got taken advantage of in a couple of spots, but then I found one place that led to another, and I pretty much grew from there, and next thing I know, I was a little popular, so I was like, all right, I love this, you know.
Now, one of the things that you have accomplished in your career is you were an original member of the Gouge roster, which happens to be a goal and a dream of mine to accomplish. What was it like getting in on the ground floor at Gouge?
Well, first I have to pay my proper respects to Gouge. That was my second home. That's one of the very few promotions. I mean, I loved working for everybody I've worked for, but it's one of the very few that I just absolutely adored going to. The locker room was always pleasant. I mean, we were just a wide bunch of different gimmicks that, you know, you didn't see very often all in one spot. And we like to do more of the entertaining sessions there. You know, even if we had some rivalries between each other where, you know, we didn't really like each other, we still did what we had to do for the fans' entertainment because that's what we were there for. That's what they paid us for. And a lot of shows claim that, but Gouge, I felt, really earthed that, you know what I'm saying? And it was always a pleasure to work for Grog and you know, and then the other boys in the locker room that run it, and Seymour Snott, even though him and I had a rivalry, you know, I still respect the Mike because, you know, he did a lot for Gouge, and he actually helped me get into Gouge. I guess it probably so he could, you know, kick my off here and there. But, you know, other than that, you know, I do have a lot of respect for him. There was, you know, just the Biz, he's a threatening menace that was there, and other members there. Even though it's some people you didn't like, you still had a great experience in that locker room. And I recommend anybody who is willing and to do something for the business, if they have the opportunity to work for Gouge, I'd highly recommend it.
I will on about this.
Well, I have an invitation finally after months and months of begging and begging and begging, so I'm definitely going to follow your recommendation.
Congratulations, Mike. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, for the people that aren't overly familiar with Gouge, it stands for Gimmicks Only Underground Grappling Entertainment. Very entertaining promotion. When you first started out with Gouge, did you have sort of a vision of what you thought it was going to be like, or was it something that evolved into what it is?
Well, I had a vision, but it wasn't what I expected because, like I said, I grew up and I watched a lot of 80s-style wrestling and stuff. I had the big gimmicks and the over-the-topness, but I thought that pretty much had died in the business because, I mean, pretty much nowadays it's your average Joe Blow name up in there, and they're not really gimmicking. I mean, no offense to any of the fellow wrestlers or anything like that, but, you know, it's more about they're trying to put themselves out there, which is great because I feel you need a good mix of those as well for us gimmicks to get involved with. But Gouge was just, it was all pure gimmick. And I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty interesting. I was like, my first match there, I had to face Go-Go the Gay Gorilla. And that was quite an interesting little storyline. But, you know, I saw how it went over with the fan base, and I was really liking that because that's what I got into it for, was to entertain not only myself, but, you know, other people who were like me that grew up watching it and loved it. You know, so then when I saw how the fans were reacting to me, even though they didn't like me, they still were all about, you know, screaming my name and couldn't wait to see me get hurt. You know, that was better than most other promotions, because a lot of other promotions, it's hard to get some of those fans into the matches. So they're just kind of sitting there on their hands and they're enjoying the show, but, you know, there's not a lot of entertainment as far as, you know, getting to keeping their attention. And that's what Gouge offered, and that's what I really liked about the play.
Now, Gouge runs a lot of outdoor shows, especially in the summertime. They're able to get outdoors. Did you find any major differences wrestling outdoor shows versus indoor shows?
Absolutely, right. It's one of the things I always tell other workers that are especially up-and-coming ones, and I discuss with them all the time, is that you sit there and you know, you watch the other fighting situations like boxing and, you know, your MMA, and they get to take breaks, you know, in between they're giving their all, and they get to go sit down for a minute and catch their breath and then come back and do it. Whereas we as professional wrestlers, there's no break. You're from beginning to end, go, 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 unless you're in a tag match or some situation like that where you might be able to get a break if we let you, you know. And then, you know, then you add that outside heat. Like already in the wintertime, you're sweating inside while they got the heat on because you're still freezing and you got sweat that's steaming off like the football players here in America do when they're playing the football in the wintertime. then we get out there in the heat and add that sunlight onto us, and it's just baking you. So, I think it really tests your mettle if you can actually go out there and do a 10-15-minute match in the middle of the sun, you know, with the fans screaming at you, and you can still keep their attention.
Now, I know that there's a lot of young talent out in your neck of the woods in the southeastern part of the United States, the Carolinas especially. Who are some of the young talents out there that you see that you think are going to be major stars in the next few years?
Well, one of them just recently got here, that I took notice to. I was working for a company over in Eastern North Carolina, Shockwave Entertainment. There's a young Colby Carino, Steve Carino, you know, the king of old schools. His son is working, and he's done a few things for RH from what I've seen, and just watching him, because, you know, we'll go to the gym and we'll do some training, and just watching him, how he moves in there, and then, like, you know, just watching his ideas, it's just truly, I see that Mike going somewhere, you know, especially, you know, he's got the Carino background, and then he's got that training too. So yeah, the boy's quick on his feet and really quick on it in his mind. So I see him becoming something big. So, you know, you get a little more seasoning, and he'd probably be an unstoppable force. As far as
definitely looks good, yes.
As far as other talent, I've seen some other young talent out there through the schools I've gone through. Because as you know, I try to tell even all the up and comings, you know, just because you went to school and learned how to do this, and once you start, you know, actually going to shows and working these shows, you don't stop schooling yourself. Always go to a different school, get someone else's training, get someone else's perspective on what they do. So, I mean, I believe every day you're training. Even the days you're in the ring that match, you know, that bloke across the ropes from you, you know, he's probably got a different style, and it's going to teach you something too. And if you hit it off and y'all are at least decent enough to talk to each other, you know, maybe he's got some ideas on how you can make your craft better, you know. So absolutely, you know, always go to school for it, and always, you know, pay attention to what you're doing.
Well, we have a game on this show that we like to play. It's a little psychological game. We call it Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk. I'll give you a series of two options, and the one that Wallaby Joe would most prefer is the answer. Are you prepared to play around and bring on the choice, bring on the funk?
All right, well, I'll take a stab at it, mate, absolutely. I'm all afraid of anything.
All right, here we go. Pinfall or submission?
Am I given the choice on that one?
Yes.
Pinfall.
Trunks or tights?
What tights? Sorry.
Pretty quickly.
All right, tights over trunks. All right. Ron Garvin or Ron Bass?
Ron Garvin.
Koala or kangaroo?
Kangaroo.
Water or beer?
Beer.
Newspaper or magazine?
Oh, buddy, I don't like either, but if I had the choice, probably a magazine. At least you can find something entertaining in there.
Sunset Flip or Oklahoma Roll?
Sunset.
Valet or manager?
I love a good manager, but I have to go with valet because they're always so pretty.
The last one, a four-sided ring or a six-sided ring?
Six-sided. Actually had opportunity to work in it twice and did a tryout at TNA in their ring, and I really enjoyed working that six-sided.
One of the things that people probably know you from if they follow the magazines is Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It's been around for over 35 years now. It's been a force in the business, maybe not quite as visible in the digital age as it had been before, but still a way to get name recognition. Where do you see Pro Wrestling Illustrated as it relates to the wrestling business as a whole, and do you see it as a way for the younger wrestlers to be able to make a bigger name for themselves?
Well, I've always liked that magazine because I felt like, I mean, even though, you know, the main pages of it are obviously going to be a big time shows, but it also gives the indie promotion some place to post their results, and you can see where their names are coming up. So, I mean, because really these big time shows, they're obviously the gold. Everybody would love to work for one of them. You know, they would line up in the thousands, if not millions, for it if they could. But you know, when you put it in that magazine, and it's your name in there, and you see your name in there, and it's like, wow, I know somewhere I never thought I'd see my name. And then it gives you a little more hope that maybe you can get up on the front pages. You know what I'm saying? And I see it. It's been a very helpful tool for the wrestling community because, you know, without that, I mean, where'd all these other magazines pretty much base their stuff from? You know, and get names out there that probably wouldn't normally be exposed to the public. And so, therefore, you know, I felt it's a great tool, and I hope that it's around for a long time and still and constantly does the same promotions it does, because otherwise a lot of us that are out there, you know, even the ones that may not necessarily be trying to get the name out there like that, they just want to get a little bit of fun in there. But it gives them an opportunity to have their name print in bold that, you know, thousands of people get to read, if not more than that. But, you know, so that therefore your name might not stick necessarily, but somebody read your name and that wouldn't have happened in any other way. So I feel it's a great opportunity, especially for all of us workers.
At this point in the show, my co-host QT is standing by and he has questions. So does help you as I pass things along to QT.
Well, I thank you, mate.
Well, thank you.
So I had to worry about. Hey, how's it going, Mike?
Well, it's going pretty good. Wallaby, I saw the video, Wallaby Joe versus Trailer Park Heat, and at the 4:58 mark, there is a picture of you and Trailer Park Heat on a pool table with red felt. Trailer Joe had just completed a suplex. My question is, were there any pool balls on the table when the suplex happened?
Honestly, mate, when it happened, the last thing I was worried about, I was trying to just stop from being slammed on it. But I think there might have been a call in the pictures I've seen of it, I believe so. It was a very, very painful situation, and I'm sure it could have been worse. But where I landed, a good thing there was not a pool ball.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, there's nothing like a black eight ball in the lower lumbar region.
I know, mate. That's going to be a hard opportunity to pass.
Well, all right. Well, now, after the pool table incident, you went outside, and both of you wrestlers wound up in the back of a station wagon with the tailgate down. The station wagon belonged to a lady named Felicia O. Was she a former intergender tag team partner of yours?
I don't remember if her and I had a match like that. I know she did wrestle, and she was my manager / valet in a previous situation. But I don't think, I mean, outside of maybe a six-way, I don't think we were actually like tag team members.
Oh, okay. All right. Probably not tag team or intergender partners, okay. At any point in this match, was Trailer Park Joe bound with duct tape and thrown into a body of water?
Not correct. He's Trailer Park Heat. I'm the Joe. But, yeah, we bound him with some tape and threw him in the back, and then Felicia, she was a great manager. She always like tried to look out for me. So she turned on the Australian national anthem and blasted it from the speakers as we drove off and dumped them in some little river creek, falls of the Noose area or something like that in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, so he was dumped into a body of water.
Absolutely. I had to cool him off, mate. That heat was ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, are there any plans for you and Trailer Park Heat to form a duet synchronized swim team due to your duct tape experience in the water?
None in my immediate future that I'll have plans of, Mike. That's, him and I have had several run-ins, and I don't think we're fans like that of each other. So there ain't going to be much synchronizing.
Oh, all right. I'm going to write down no plans to form a duet swim team, synchronized swim team. A little bit disappointed there. Okay. All right.
Well, I can't give the fans everything, Mike.
Oh, okay. All right. I myself would like to see Trailer Park Heat in a Speedo. That's me. Yes.
Mike, I've off the impact stage, and unfortunately, I've had that experience, and I don't think that. I mean, if that's something you're into, if you like a fluffy mate, that's all about you. But it was not a pleasant experience for me.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, is it true that Jeff Hardy and Shannon Moore were at this match?
I hate name dropping, but yeah. You can see Shannon Moore was there, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, and Gregory Hounds. They were all there because they actually were part of, before Gouge, it was SCW, and they used to be part of SCW, and they worked for Grog and all them when they were running that organization. And then when SCW closed, then eventually they got back together and they formed Gouge. So it was still kind of like, I guess, a home to where they grew up and where they honed their skills at, as well as the other many places they have. So they came there, and they would come from time to time and film the Hardy Show thing, or they would just come and watch and see the upcoming new talent and get entertained.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you recall what temperature it was at this match? Was it like about 101 degrees outside?
No. I believe it was probably about the 80s, because it was later on in the season, but it was hot for me because, I mean, we took it to each other in that match. We were hitting each other with ring bells and chairs, and I took a suplex on the pool table. So, you know, once you get smacked all that, your body's pretty much on fire. So, you know, and we were sweating. But, no, I'm not going to say it was 101, Mike.
Oh, okay.
About a little experience with the heat.
Okay. All right. Well, in 2006, was Cinnamon Snort a tag team partner with Seymour Snot?
Her name was Cinnamon Snort as well, but yes, she was a kind of tag partner with. Wait, we were supposed to do something in the gender, but it never happened. But yeah, she was like a manager valet of Seymour Snort.
Oh, all right.
But
okay.
that actually became because she kept interrupting matches and of mine. And for some reason, had something in for Felicia O, so they constantly would wind up costing mine and Trevor Fox match during that time period to be interrupted and could not get a winner. So, you know, and then after a while, like, we basically hurt her, and then Seymour came out and saved her, and I guess she just got all brainy-eyed for the snot, you know, so she became like a little manager valet and was supposed to work up something in there, but I can't remember what happened that stopped it.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, Wallaby, do you own a Wallaby Joe's Frozen Treasures and Coffee Shop?
If I did, mate, I wouldn't be doing some of the stuff I have to do now to make money. But no, I don't. Somebody got my name?
Yes. If you go on YouTube or I think Facebook, you can see a Wallaby Joe's Frozen Treasures and Coffee Shop. And some of the critiques of this place from customers are very good. Very good.
Well, there's nothing more flattering than someone else using your name to get their product out, you know. I mean, it'd be nice to get a little royalty here and there, yeah, but I at least get my name out there.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Now, you have a tattoo on your left arm on the side of your bicep. Is this the Australian Outback Bird of War on your arm?
I would take my perspective of that and say yes, but no, it's a gargoyle. I have four gargoyles on me.
Oh, a gargoyle. Okay. All right. Gargoyle. Okay. Now, have you ever teamed with a wrestler named Leo Ryker?
Yes, right before I left North Carolina and came down here to Georgia, I did a couple matches, my final matches with Gouge, since I was, you know, moving. And so I had to team up with Leo Riker. Yes. Why would you ask that, Mike?
Oh, I don't know. That name, Leo Riker, it somehow jumped out at me. Yes.
Okay.
Made an impression. Okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, do you think that the Australian wrestling stars of the 1970s, such as Bulldog Brewer, Mario Milano, Big Bad John, and Killer Carl Cox had an influence on you?
Not quite so familiar with those names. Forgive me on that. But more or less the Fabulous Kangaroos and such had some influence on me. I got more into the American style of wrestling. I mean, I still watch my Aussie brothers, but I got more into the American because there was more of a show put on, you know, by, you know, the WWWF and the NWA and situations like that. You know, we get, you know, friends of mine would like bring videos and show me and stuff like that. So, you know, I got more influenced by the American.
Oh, okay. I think when you're saying the Kangaroos, you might be referencing Lord Jonathan Boyd and Sir Charles of Portland Wrestling back in the 70s, Portland, Oregon Wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, they carried the boomerangs to the crow's nest during their interview. I found that very good. Entertaining.
Right. Yeah. And then also you got the Sea Protas, you know, Butch and Luke and the other one that, you know, granted they were Kiwis, you know, but still, you know, it was kind of like we have a thing against Kiwis, but they're still our brothers when they're out there representing us on the world. You know what I'm saying, Mike?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, can you give us an example of a few of the natural predators that the Wallabies face in the outback, and do you use some of these predatorial hunting techniques in the ring yourself?
Yeah, there's you know, all kinds of stuff out there. I mean, pretty much anything in Australia is trying to kill you. You got, you know, your kangaroo, which pretty much looks like a steroid muscle bound freak that, you know, they do like a drop kick on you. I do use that. You know, the drop bears, you know, so when I jump off the turnbuckle, I'll use their skills to hopefully claw an enemy or something like that. You got some of our snakes that, you know, you got to slither up behind them and catch that wind real quick so, you know, you can eat your reward. I use a frog splash. It's basically, you know, like Aussie frog splash, you know, because we got some crazy frogs out there too, mate, you know. So, I mean, I don't have, like, specific animals I might do every single move for, but for the most part, I do watch their predatory ways and I try to apply them to my science when I'm actually in the ring with, you know, a combatant.
Oh, okay. I'm going to mark down that you do incorporate predatorial ways and stalking techniques. Okay, very good. And make detailed notes. Okay. Now, Wallaby, is a hurricane in Australia called a Willy Willy?
Well, it depends, right? You know, some people, everybody has their own words. Everybody has their own things. They're not really hurricanes per se when they're over there in the Pacific Coast anyway. We call them other things. But, yeah, it's about, some of them are a little more intense.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess my dad was a sailor, and he said that Willy Willys were often called hurricanes in Australia. I don't know if that's urban legend or not. Yes.
I didn't grow up on the seas, you know, up where I'm from, we were kind of smack in the middle of the outback, so it's pretty much the only sea we had was sand.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, Aboriginal youth in the Australian outback often form together in like-minded groups or get together from proximal neighborhoods or streets and form dance teams. They have dance contests against kids from other neighborhoods and streets. The thing with each group is that they identify themselves with the heavy metal American rock group T-shirts that they wear. You can often see a group of dancers with Pantera shirts going against a group of dancers with Megadeth T-shirts on, or Slayer, or maybe Metallica or Motorhead shirts. My question is, did your mate, Russell Crowe, belong to one of these dance-off teams as a youth?
I think that if he did, I'm not really sure about his youth part of that, but if he did, they probably kept him around for comedic entertainment. I'm sure they danced better than he did, at least.
Oh, I don't know. Now, I've seen some YouTube video of Russell dancing, you know, and he's kind of like a downgraded Fred Astaire, in my opinion. Yes.
He does not get some of the credit he deserves, but I don't know about Fred Astaire, maybe more, you know, Charlie Chaplin or something like that. But, you know, please their own opinion. Good question,
okay.
Mate. Good question. I like the research in that one.
Oh, we always ask the good questions here, yes. Okay. Well, Wallaby, I saw the YouTube video entitled Russell Crowe versus Jennifer Blaze with Wallaby Joe. Jennifer got the win over Russell, and this was the same venue where both of you went up against and were clotheslined by Seymour Snott. My question is, did Seymour Snott buy you a supersized burrito from one of the many food trucks that were next to the ring? That's my question. Yes.
If he did, I didn't get an advantage of that. I don't think Seymour would have bought me a burrito. He's more into the physical fitness, so he'd probably have bought me a salad. That's about all I know. If he did, I'm sorry, mate. I didn't get it. You know, don't be angry, but you owe me a burrito now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, were you a big fan of Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Hunter?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I like to think that I kind of emulate him in a way. It was very sad for, you know, my community as well as the world for that loss.
Well, is it true that you were under negotiations with his daughter, Bindi Irwin, to get her into the wrestling ring? There's a rumor out there. Yes.
I'm not at liberty to confirm or deny such an allegation. I do a lot to keep my private life private, as well as Bindi. I'm sure she wants to keep it private too, you know, so that's not something I'm at liberty to discuss.
Oh, all right. I'm going to put down you can't disclose that for legal purposes. Okay, very good. All right. Well, is it true that in Australia, a knife-edged chop delivered by a female wrestler is called a Sheila chop?
I could see that. I don't know. I've never had a Sheila chop me. But, you know, I've had several that wanted to, I'm sure. But, you know, not from Australia anyway.
Oh, all right. I think I'm going to make it one of my life's goal to travel to Australia and get a Sheila chop named after me. That would be a life goal. Much more important than a bachelorette degree or something like that. Yes.
The Sheila chop actually sounds kind of delicious, mate, if you think about it. You know, a little bit of lamb, all that. Sheila chop. There you go. Throw it up on the barbie.
Oh, yeah.
Sauce on it. Oh, it's beautiful.
I think I'll try to get something going in America called a Sheila shop, now that I think of it. Yes.
There we go.
Now, Wallaby, have you ever had a chance to go to Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs and Chinese Food in Atlanta, Georgia?
No, I have not. I haven't even heard of that, and I'm a little disappointed they might say have not brought this to my attention if that exists. But now that you've told me, I must look that up.
Yes, Abdullah the Butcher, he owns a very nice restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia. Even Sign Guy's been to there, and Sign Guy ordered the fish. Yes.
The fish? Why would you get the fish?
I like fish.
All right. You got a little bit of a steak hater there. Is that what that is, Mike?
I like fish. It was delicious.
All right. that's what you like, mate, please, sir, but nobody probably serve up a piece of meat better than I do with a butcher, I will have to say.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, do you know if Rassel Crowe has a Halloween stipulation match coming up this October?
No, I don't. I haven't talked to him in a little bit since I moved because we've both been trying to take care of some situations with our lives. But if there's a rumor, I'm going to have to ask him about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you could keep us informed of that. Okay. That would be very good. All right.
All right.
Well, Wallaby, have you or Rassel ever used a miniature cricket paddle as a foreign object?
No. I can't say that I have. Not a big fan of the cricket, but I do know that at one point Rassel Crowe used a stake, a stob, where to mark off land territory as a foreign object, and it messed with some devastating circumstances with his bum. But other than that, that's the only foreign object I know specifically outside of the norm that we've used.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, Wallaby, there are some American wrestlers that personify the upper crust of society, the cultural elite, if you will, the blue bloods, like when Triple H was starting out. And maybe William Regal comes to mind, as well as the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase and John Bradshaw Layfield. And some wrestlers come from the poorer backgrounds, like Uncle Elmer, Hillbilly Jim, and the female wrestler ODB. My question is, what do they call an Australian redneck?
Australian redneck?
Yes.
Mate.
Oh, okay, just mate, okay.
Well, that's what I call them, because that's basically what they refer to us. If there was any comparison, they'd actually call Australians like the rednecks of that area.
Oh, okay. What's some of the more famous outback areas that have Australian rednecks, the more famous areas? Like in the United States, it would be the Appalachians.
Wow. Probably more so out towards my area, the Cooper Pedy Way, and just different in the southern territories mostly.
Oh, okay, Southern Territories. I'm going to mark that down, okay. All right. Now, have you yourself ever driven to the ring in a limousine like JBL used to, or maybe a lowrider like Eddie Guerrero?
No, unfortunately, nobody will trust me to do that. I've tried on several opportunities, but they're afraid that, because apparently I have bad luck with inanimate objects. They tend to get broken around me. So they won't let me do it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Wallaby, is the platypus a native marsupial of Australia?
I know it lives there.
Oh, okay.
My question is,
why haven't any wrestlers been named the Masked Platypus?
I thought there was one. I think I've heard that name, actually. If memory serves me correct, but I've taken some chair shots, especially from people like C.W. Anderson, and they'll crash the skull. So I can't recall for sure, but I believe there is one somewhere.
Oh, well, all right. I've got my homework assignment to look up if there indeed is a masked platypus. I'm just saying that it's probably because the platypus does not project the majesty and power of, say, a grizzly bear or buffalo. That's what I think.
Well, I see that, but it's probably kind of like when someone looks at me, myself, in the ring, we've got that cute little adorable face, but, there's a tail and claws waiting for you you're forgetting about. So that's kind of what I would do a comparison of with.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Wallaby, what are some of the more serious injuries that you have had to overcome? Have you ever had a torn rotator cuff?
I don't know if I tore it. I know I took a when I first started training, before I actually started going into shows, probably about 6 months into my training, and I took a overhead belly to belly that planted me on my shoulder and basically broke my whole shoulder out. I couldn't move or anything like that, and we all just are kind of strong-headed. We don't like going to the doctor if we can fix it ourselves. So I kind of, you know, did my own rehabilitation for it and got use back of it. That's, I think, my most serious injury I've ever had. But I've also, I mean, I've had the left side of my body pretty much busted up. I've, you know, almost lost my eyeball 2 or 3 times. You know, there's some injuries you wouldn't even think that come out of it that actually show up, and yeah, it scares you for a minute.
Oh boy, that does sound pretty rough. Wow. All right. Well, I'm about to pass it back to Sign Guy. I'd like to, before I leave, I'd like to have you inform Russell Crowe that I am going to try and give him a Motorhead T-shirt, and I'm going to challenge him in an Australian Outback dance-off while I wear a South Park T-shirt myself. Yes.
All right. I will definitely be willing to pass that along. Also, because you're bringing up past tag partners, I'd like to give a shout-out to Koala Bear O'Day. If you're out there and you're listening, please, mate, message me. But thank you for your time, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering the in-depth questions. And back to you, Sun Guy. Yes.
Thank you, QT. Well, Wallaby Joe, one of the things that we have in the wrestling business that Australia made famous, of course, Australian rules tag team matches, which most fans view as just a regular tag team match. The rules were declared Australian rules when wrestling was in its infancy. What is it like for you in tag team matches, knowing that tag team wrestling is something that really got started in your native Australia?
Well, I like that we donated that, because, I mean, it's obviously been, you know, a lot of fun for me doing it. I'm a little disappointed that a lot of places don't actually follow the rules, you know, but I guess it is America, and no insult, but y'all kind of do your own thing. But, I mean, big disappointment. There's no, you know, a lot of places don't have that rope for the partner to hold on to. That's limiting where you can go, and next thing you know, you got somebody cheating, and it just gets, you know, once you start following the rules, it becomes mayhem, right, you know. So I'd like it to see it to go back to its earlier form, but, you know, at least we brought this part to you, you know what I'm saying, and we're quite proud of that.
Now, in your career, I'm sure you have run into a few instances where fans were less than happy with some of the things you were doing. What's been some of the scarier fan instances that you've ran into?
There was one of the incidences for Gouge. It was like my second or third match there. We were out in Butner, North Carolina. There's not a lot out there, but apparently we found a sports complex, and there was a lot of fans there that night. I was quite surprised by the turnout, but as I later found out, there was a match between Trailer Park Heat and Scab, and it was to determine who was going to be the heavyweight champion. And I felt a little, you know, like I was told I was going to do something there, so I might as well do something. So I ran out and interrupted the match and cost Trailer Park Heat the match, is what they say. But I didn't realize that actually Butner, North Carolina is, I guess, Trailer Park Heat's family. So when that happened, I rolled out the ring. About two-thirds of the audience stood up and was about to basically tear me from limb from limb. And I pretty much had to make a hasty exit. Then I've also had fans that, like, have literally swung at me and punched me. I've gotten threats and situations like that. I had a group of 9-year-olds that, after I fell out of the ring, I was a little scared because I didn't realize they were kids, that they started kicking and stomping on me while I was laying on the ground. And when I looked up, you know, it was just this massive group of children just trying to pummel me to death. You know, it's like, how do you respond to that? You know?
That is a bit of a dicey situation.
A little bit, mate, a little bit. But I did have one incident where apparently a fan got mad at myself and another wrestler. We were going to do we were going to run in on somebody, and their child got in our way, and we told the child to need to go sit down. Well, he's not a child; he's more or less a teenager. But it's still a little disrespectful, and it caused the person I was working with at the time to, you know, say something a little rude to him. And he went back and got his mom, and then his mom came over there and started and went out to her vehicle to get a gun to try to shoot one of us, you know. So, but luckily we had a fellow who stopped that before she got back in the building. So it was, yeah, sometimes fans take it a little seriously, especially when you know your gimmick is all about insulting the other people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you have wrestled in a lot of promotions, and you've been in there with a lot of different referees, I'm sure. Who are some of the better referees that you've come across?
Let's see. My favorite referee to work with of all time, what's his name? Sorry, if you hadn't asked, I'd have had it. Ron Mills. Ron Mills, he was one of my favorite to work with because he pretty much kept everything on the board. He made sure that you were safe if necessary. A lot of referees don't really know some of the things to make sure that everybody's still alive when working in there. But he's definitely on point. Then there was my second favorite. What is it? Carlton Banks? He was my second favorite referee. And which he pretty much tried to do. He pretty much tried to do the same way as far as keeping everything straight and legal in the match, and making sure that you were all right if something bad happened.
Well, we have a second game on the show that we like to play. So, once again, it's a little psychological game. We call it word association. I will throw out the names of some people that you most likely have come across, and the first word or two that pops into your head to describe them will be the answer. Are you prepared for a round of word association?
Absolutely, Mike.
All right, here we go. Count Grog.
Great.
Dick Foley.
Pain.
Seymour Snot.
Nemesis.
Ricky Morton.
Legend.
Jimmy Jack Funk Jr.
What's the name of that group that sings that P on the Funk song? That's the only thing that comes to my mind when I think of them. There you go. Can I use that?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, the Parliament Funkadelic.
Casey Carlisle.
Ah, beautiful.
Ivan Koloff.
Honored.
And the last one, Juan Jeremy.
Cow. I'm keeping it G-rated, mate. I don't know the rating of the show.
Well, you mentioned earlier about having a TNA tryout, and like you were saying, also you've worked with people like the Hardys and Shane Helms on various shows in your career.
I didn't work with. I don't want nobody saying I said some stuff like that, because I can have a weird backlash. Right? So just not trying to cut y'all.
Well, my mistake. I meant to imply same shows, not directly in a match with.
Okay, gotcha.
What do you think of the direction that TNA is taking right now with their television product? Is that something that you think is going to help them start to succeed a little bit, or do you think that it's going to be something that's not going to catch on with the fans?
Well, unfortunately on that part, I mean, I used to really enjoy TNA. I did like a lot of what they were doing, and then when they started changing, trying to go back to some of the older ways, like they got rid of the six-sided ring, some of the stuff that was going on, just like, I kind of lost interest in it. And, I mean, I still watched it from time to time. I mean, obviously there's great talent there. I'm not saying nobody watched it, but it wasn't catching my attention. And I haven't really heard a lot of what they're doing right now, but I hope that they're doing something better, because I'd really like to see them grow back to where they were, if not more. Because, you know, WWE is still a good product, but, you know, without competition, you know, the product kind of dries itself out. And so I think that they kind of play that role that, if not, gives WWE something to work for more, too. So that way, you know, you open up more opportunities for more workers to have better shows to go work, but also so that there's more, you know, of a reason for them to work hard to keep their fans sitting there watching.
Very well said. Now, also, there are a lot of history of Australians in wrestling. Guys like Outback Jack was there. You have guys like Tony Garea. In your opinion, who is the best Australian-based wrestler of all time?
You talking about as far as in the United States?
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's go with both. One that made it in the United States and one that didn't necessarily travel outside of Australia.
Well, I was kind of proud that Nathan Jones had kind of made it out of Australia and debuted in WWE, but that was my pride. But then, you know, when he no longer worked for him, and I'm, you know, the circumstances that came up with it, that kind of was a disappointment. But I was really proud that Nathan Jones kind of made it in my eyes, you know, because, you know, we're pretty much, it's a known thing, when you make it to the WWE, you kind of made it, you know, not necessarily a permanent job there, but nonetheless, I mean, you had a spot on. But as far as Australian based in America, I'd probably go with Outback Jack.
All right. We have a few minutes left in the show. I want to give ample time to you. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything and everything you have, upcoming appearances, social medias, merchandise, your favorite radio station, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Matt. Mate, I don't know where that came from. But I appreciate that, mate, and I love that I had this opportunity, and thank you for the questions you've asked. Also, I'd like to, you know, give a shout-out to my homeland, Australia, and my former tag partners, Jason, Terminator X. You know, he was my first tag partner in America, and he really did a lot for me. Then you got Koala Bear O'Day, which, again, mate, if you're out there and you're listening, I haven't heard from you in a while, so I want to make sure you're okay, mate, and see what you're up to. Contact me. WrestlePro, lots of good memories with that, mate, and he's a great person. And, you know, I hope that he's still in the business and doing his thing up there in the Carolinas representing the sheep herders. Then also want to plug my Facebook page. Just Google Wallaby Joe. That'll pull me right up on Facebook. Add me, message me. I'll talk to you as long as you don't say nothing crazy. You're not some of the stalkers I tend to get. My YouTube channel, which has been out for a little bit, but I'm getting ready to start doing some things for it. It's on, look up WWTV Productions, all one word. That should pull you up my YouTube channel, or just Wally Joe, and that'll take you to it somewhere in the list. I just recently moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I haven't dipped my toes in down here yet, but I'm looking for promotions that might be willing to, you know, take on the Aussie in their ring and maybe add a little bit of flair to their to their shows. Message me on Facebook and we'll see what we can do on that. And for all the upcoming talent that's out there, that, I mean, keep your nose to the grind and learn something. You some of these old mates that are up here in the shows that you might look at like, oh, he's just an old fool. He's going to learn you something that you would never have learned otherwise. You know, and for the older gentlemen that are out there still working it, I have total and utmost respect for you guys. Even the ones that don't like, I still respect you. Anybody I've ever been in the ring with that has taught me, thank you, mate. That includes from the ones I don't like to the ones that are my favorites. They've all taught me and helped craft Wallaby Joe into the man and the wrestler that he is today.
Well, Wallaby Joe, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. We enjoyed it immensely. Hopefully we will get you back sometime in the future, have another go with this. And best of luck to you as you look to continue on in Atlanta.
All right. Thank you, mate. Absolutely. I appreciated the time and the exposure.
All right, fans, if you do get the chance to catch Wallaby Joe, definitely do so. He's an outstanding talent, very entertaining. I also encourage you to go on the YouTube, look up some of his old gouge stuff. Very, very entertaining stuff. And we will be back with you next week.
Yes.
Good on.
Thank you, Wallaby.
Thank you, mate. Thank you very much.